All right. Hey, good afternoon from wherever you're watching. Jason Hovelman, and we're going to reconvene and talk about attics and knee walls. And well, if you watched last month, a lot of discussion about narrow stairways and tight spots. And you can really be effective with your extinguishment by using Keyhose in those situations. Hard to kink, very reliable, durable product. So keep in mind when you're looking for hose, look no further than Keyhose. And I'm going to pass this off to Chief Halton.
Hey, thank you. And Keyhose will be at FDIC. We'll be using a ton of Keyhose there. So, you know, please come down. And if you're in the engine class, or if you're in the stretching for success, or if you're in nozzle forward, or if you're in a bunch of other classes, you'll be using Keyhose. So check it out. Really, really great people down in Dothan, Alabama, where Larry Williams is the fire chief. So if you're in Dothan, Alabama, stop in. It's one of the largest facilities in the country, and they give a great tour and they feed you. So probably after saying they feed you, probably have 40 firefighters show up there tomorrow saying, nah, I just want the lunch. But so just kidding. So FDIC is about 7 weeks away. If you haven't signed up yet, please sign up. If you have signed up, but you haven't selected your hands-on training classes, please do that, because several of them already sold out. The Making the Grab, Grant Schwalbe's class, sold out. Bobby Eckert's limited staffing class, sold out. Bunch of classes sold out. So, you know, please take advantage of it. Writ Under Fire at the Illinois Fire Services Institute. Thank you so much. What wonderful people. There's just a few slots left, and some really like innovative classes, like the water rescue class, which is like super cool. The kid teaching that is the guy who on Shark Week dove in the water to save that guy from Jackass who got bit by the shark. This is the medic that actually dove in and pulled the shark off this guy's arm. Really messed the guy up bad. So, you know, if you want to get a chance to take a class from that cat, who's like in really high demand, but and a great instructor, that class will have some spots left in it. You know, a nozzle forward is filling up really fast. You know, if you don't get a hold of it, you don't get an Aaron's class early, you ain't getting in. So please, if you, because I got like 280 of you, 290 of you, who've signed up for the full hot package and you haven't picked a single class. So if you're one of those people, get it done. So, and you may be one of those people because your job signed you up. You have one of those packages, because we've got great packages for 10 and 20 and 30. If you're in one of those packages, you know, make sure that you go to get online and pick your classes. So I'd appreciate that. If you call me and ask me if you can get you into a hotel, I don't do that. I don't do anything with the hotels, because I can't even get into a decent hotel. They got me out at the Ramada in West Lafayette near the college. So I'm happy for that. So it's really tough. And registration's out of control. You know, COVID's over. The world's opened back up. People are traveling. You know, and when you get to Indy, you know, you can take the shuttles and you can walk, so you're not burning gas. So we're anticipating 40,000 people, just 40,000 firefighters. And then everybody else. So it's going to be crazy. And we've got some of the most amazing special events. So I asked my buddy, Vic Stagnaro, to jump on with us. And Victor is second in command of the National Fallen Firefighters. He works directly under Ron Sarnicky. And he's been there for, boy, at least 15 years, right, Victor?
About 12. It feels okay. Like 15, but it's close enough.
So a long time. And one of the, and this is no exaggeration, one of the finest guys you'll ever want to meet. A great officer out of Prince George County. An incredible human being. If Victor Stagnaro tells you something, you can take it to the bank. He'll either get it done, or he'll find a way to get it done, or he'll help you get through it. But so if you ever have a line of duty death, or you ever have, you know, something going on at the National Fallen Firefighters, or even if somebody's at the National Fire Academy and they get jammed up and you can't get a hold of anybody, get a hold of me. I'll get you in touch with Victor, or get a hold of Victor directly. And he will move heaven and earth. But the National Fallen Firefighters got a brand new event they're doing with the Combat Challenge people I want to tell you about. It's called the Backyard Barbecue. And they're going to have a bunch of goofy charity things that you can do. You're like just to goof around with the stuff and whatnot. And it's before the union party. So you can go and get something in your stomach before they go to where you're going to put free beer in your stomach, which doesn't end well if your stomach is empty. So they're going to have hot dogs. They're going to have, you know, soft drinks and such. At this deal, and it's going to be a really, really cool event, and please take advantage of checking it out. It's going to be just amazing, and you just make a donation. You just make a donation, right, Vic? You just make a donation. So
yep, just show up, make a donation, and Yeah, and we're certainly grateful for your support and FDIC's support to make that event happen for us. It's a new event, and we're thrilled to be part of it.
That's Friday at about 3 to 6, right? And that's
4:30. I think 4:30 start time till about 6. So right, yeah, plenty of time to get to the Union Party afterwards.
College, right there where the Combat Challenge is, out in the outside area, parking lot area. On Thursday night, Stop Drop Rock and Roll is back in the Indiana Ballroom. Going to have a great band. We're going to have an amazing auction. They got incredible stuff that you can get real cheap and donate to the National Fallen Firefighters. So it's a great event right after the Fun Run, which is the Fun Runs for the Cancer Society this year, White River State Park. Get out there about 5 o'clock. We're going to go off about 6 o'clock. That's an amazing event for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. So please join us for the Fun Run. Then we're all going to go over to Stop Drop Rock and Roll. And don't forget, Friday is the 9/11 Memorial Stair Climb at Lucas Oil Stadium. And that's going to be right after the GEMS games. GEMS games are going to be from 8 a.m. to about 11. And then at 1 o'clock is the 9/11 Memorial Stair Climb. The money that gets raised there goes to the psychological counseling unit at FDNY and other places like that that help guys and gals get through rough times, like when you're with somebody and they get jammed up or killed on the job. Oftentimes after that, it's good to talk to somebody, and the National Fallen Firefighters will help you do that for free. So talking with good people is expensive, and they are making it happen for a lot of our brothers and sisters who are going through hard times. So keep that in mind, you know, when you're doing the climb, that not only are you doing it in memory of the 343 men and subsequently like our good friend Mark Rapp, who died this week in Indianapolis from 9/11 related cancer from working at the site. He died from 9/11 related cancer this week. He was younger than me, or a 66-year-old dad. His two sons are both on the job at IFB, and they're beautiful human beings. And Mark was a great instructor and a great friend. And that's who you're climbing for. You're climbing for everybody who responded. You're climbing for everybody who was there that day. You're climbing so that we never forget, and you're climbing for all of us who've come after those men and women who, you know, might need help in some way. So the National Fallen Firefighters does a ton of things that we never hear about: scholarships, family help. You wouldn't believe the incredible array of things that your donations go to. So, you know, please join us at the Backyard Barbecue, Stop Drop Rock and Roll, the Fun Run for the Cancer Society, the Union Bash, Stair Climb, Fool's Bash on Wednesday night. And all that stuff's important. I mean, we talk about it, but they're like hangouts like this. I mean, you can talk to Jimmy and Clark and Daryl about MeWalls. You can talk about, you know, everything from grass fires to high-rise crews, right? I mean, because we do it all. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our host this week, who needs no introduction, also an FDIC instructor, also an author, and stalwart for fire engineering and great fire chief, great leadership trainer. And if you want to get a good book on leadership, Jason's book is highly recommended. I actually talked to a friend of mine who's a Navy SEAL, and he read your book and he thought it was really good, because he wrote a leadership book, so he reads everybody else's. And he said, "Hey, you know this guy?" I said, "I know that guy." But he's a good guy.
Appreciate that. Want to echo what Chief Halton said, get to FDIC. I had a tough time picking my classes too, but I did finally get a pick. But man, there's a lot to offer and so many great instructors, a lot of new stuff, a lot of new things this year, which is nice. It's really good to see. But able to come back and talk about knee walls and attics, kind of leave where we or pick up where we left off, or where Bill and Mike and the rest of the crew picked up last month. And Jimmy Davis is on this month, who was supposed to be on last month, but was running a fire. It's some pretty chilly weather at that. But we're going to kind of pass it to Jimmy and let him kind of pick up where he would have discussed last week or last month on knee walls. And we'll just kind of go from there. We've got some pictures to show and share. And we'll keep talking about this thing it's in everybody's jurisdiction. Everybody's got a knee wall or something very similar to it, these void spaces. That can be really dangerous. So, Jimmy, what do you got for us this week?
Yeah, hello, everyone. What a great topic of a conversation to examine: fires and attics and knee walls. Very important subject. There comes some mystique with it, with fires and knee walls and attics, but the game remains the same. water on fire, get the surges and cut off fire extension. All right. If we do anything today is to draw awareness, all right, to be able to recognize and react and remedy situations involving attic fires. But let me introduce myself. 27 years on Chicago Fire Department, got about 30 years in the fire service total. It goes by quick. I still love to consider myself a student of the game, still learning, you know. But it's a great topic, and I'm glad here to draw awareness to this. And not to overcomplicate things. Again, if we stay on the premise and be able to recognize fires in the walls, chances are we'll have a better outcome with what we do on the fire ground. And then that we'll be able to dominate the fire ground instead of having the fire dominate us. I also wanted to mention too, is that you hear these single family dwelling homes as your bread and fire or a just attic. There are some built-in complexities and inherent hazards with attic fires. And there's different types, there's different construction. There's also the importance. Remember, as they said that in recruit class and all the way through your career, remember building construction, how fire behavior and fire dynamics react in some of these buildings. So it's important to know how fire is going to react in knee walls or unfinished attics. And last week, you guys did a great job with doing that. I think we scratched some of the surface, some of the topical information. But what's important, again, is that we stay with this, the ability to recognize, right? Recognize the presence of knee walls, being able to react accordingly, right? And remedy the situations. And that's where we can bring in, possibly discuss other tactical options at your disposal when you're having difficulty with a knee wall fire. Now here in Chicago, and I know Jimmy can contest, chances are one of our 99 fire companies in the city of Chicago will go through an attic fire today. That's a common occurrence. Attics and knee walls are the common building stock here in the city. So bread and butter operations, yes, but there is also some concern with bread and butter operations through repetition. Sometimes you let your guard down, and you know what happens when you let your guard down. Things do happen. So these are high-risk fires, and I generalize them as attic and basement fires. These are the ones that are going to come and get you if you're not paying attention, Chief.
So I know last week, Jim, they talked a lot about, you know, what a knee wall is. They showed some pictures of kind of what it looked like. Peter, in case somebody didn't join us last month, can we throw a picture up of what a knee wall is? So as we, yeah, Jimmy, you, I know you've got some pictures too that you sent, if you can find one, just to throw up so that the listeners, that maybe we've got a new recruit paying attention this month and wondering what exactly does a knee wall look like. I know Daryl sent some, and so that we can kind of start. That's a
so that's a firefighter standing up, looks like he's standing up in a knee wall.
Yeah.
Peter, maybe we can go to the picture of the two houses.
Okay. Get close there. There you go.
So let's go back to, okay, right there. We'll hold it there. So it's good that we're just getting back to this, because not everybody is familiar with a term. And even when I had went to fires with in knee walls, I didn't formally know exactly what was going on. So I went around and took some photos in my first two districts. And I took a photo of these two houses. It's kind of a funny story, but so okay, some may refer to it as a 1.5 story. We just call it two-story once we recognize it's a finished attic, because just to not complicate things. But basically, the pitch of the roof is very steep. You could see there's some curtains in the window, and it's large enough that, especially in more densely populated areas, they're going to try and maximize the living space. So they convert that second floor into a living attic. Can we go to... Oh, well, let me get to this. When I take a photo of this house there on the left with the red trim, And this probably wasn't too smart of me. I was into photography at the time, and this guy comes out like, "Hey, what are you taking pictures of?" Sorry, I'm with the fire department. I was in my personal vehicle, you know, no harm. I just teach building construction. And he went back in the door. So if we could go to the picture of the one-story house with the burned out knee wall. We'll keep going. Not that one. Keep going. That's inside. So this one, 2 years later, that house catches on fire. They were doing a marijuana grow in the void space. And so that's why he probably didn't want me taking pictures. It's all legal everywhere in the state now, but basically, I don't know if we can move the mouse around, but that burned out triangular area on the side is what would be considered a knee wall void space, and the fire was in there. So yeah, that's basically a knee wall void. A knee wall is that lumber that is about 4 feet high or something that is vertical, holding up the roof rafters, sitting on the ceiling joist there. So there's several reasons fire may get into that space. One is that it may actually start in the void space itself, electrical, or, you know, kids crawling around, making it their little play area or something, playing with matches or something. Or maybe the exposure where the fire starts flapping up under the eaves and spreading into that. Or maybe a lower floor fire, basement fire or something where it spreads up into that area. But Jason, you talked about attic fires. Once you get in there, you got to realize you're basically in the attic, you know. The attic's all around you and above you. So I think that's just the basics of what a knee wall is. If yeah. I start talking about the tactics of these, and this is the reason I didn't join last month, Jimmy Sunig here, who we haven't introduced yet, but was on last month, taught me most of the stuff I know about that. So I thought I figured I'd just be plagiarizing what he's taught me over the years about this stuff. But if this is our normal housing stock as well in Oakland, but if it's not your normal housing stock, I guarantee even new communities, I live in a pretty new community. There's still some older legacy houses, you know, in that original downtown area that you often have these at, and it's important to recognize these void spaces.
Yeah, that's a great illustration of what knee walls are, what they look like. And then you kind of alluded to some of the challenges as far as tactics wise go, and they mentioned them last month. But, you know, one of the questions that they broached a little bit, and it gets into extinguishment sometimes. And most of the fires I've been to in knee walls, and I'm not in a huge urban setting, but we do have an older building stock. A lot of these start on the first floor and up in there, or a lot of times the fire will auto expose from a window and get up into those soffits and get up into those knee walls. So I kind of like to ask Jimmy or Daryl or anybody else about, you know, tactics and strategies as it relates to, you have a first floor fire, you've got to search the floor above, you know, what's your take on opening up with or without a line, or how you go about doing that? When do you start opening up and move into that space?
Yeah, and I got, Pete, you may have that picture of that fire venting out of the window, impinging on that soffit.
It kind of tacks on, Chief, what you're talking about here. This was perfect. It's a great example of what you're discussing. You got a lower floor fire, obviously coming out of the window. And I made this illustration up when I teach classes of how easy it is for that fire to migrate into that soffit area, gets into that soffit, melts the aluminum. Next thing you know, you got an attic fire, right? And this is how the building breathes. Remember how the roof system breathes? It draws air in from the soffits, follows a rafter run, and exits out of a roof vent or a ridge vent. This is a great illustration. When you talk about tactics too on a lower floor fire, What we also need to be concerned about too is that if you have this fire or you see this fire and there is an attic space above, all right, a livable area, we know we have to extend searches up there. But this is a two-line fire for us. And I want to stress the importance of that too. Fire extension to the floors above, bringing a line, dedicated line to attack this fire that you see on this first floor, but a second line above. You know, and I wanted to mention something too with these searches. And I think this is very important because this has come from my perspective of life, of seeing it in the fire service and being there about searches. We got to check in those attics behind doors. Check behind doors. All right. Secondly, in these attics here, and I know with in the city of Chicago, these are very narrow, very small bedrooms. Checking during your search between the outside wall and a bed. We found kids in there. We find people behind doors. And one that always sticks with me, was many years ago, they lost a child. He was hiding in an e-wall. Remember, kids react to fire as they go and hide. They found a deceased child up in an e-wall. But those searches are very important hit on those areas. And I couldn't tell you how many people that we find in those little areas I told you and behind doorways. So keep that in your mind when you're extending a search up in that livable or occupied space where people are during a fire up there. But I wanted to use this picture as an illustration. Jimmy, did you have anything else on that?
Yes, I did, Jimmy. And that was more what you're talking about, the fire attack and searches. I feel in my experience is that if you're going to start your searches before you commit into the attic space, it was kind of talked about a little bit last week with Sam Hiddle and Steve Robertson. And it's that if you're coming up a narrow staircase, you're going to have walls on each side of you before you enter or begin your transition into the attic space. You're going to have to, maybe if you're advancing ahead of the line, taking your forcible entry tool, flathead axe, Halligan tool, your pickheaded axe, and maybe 6 to 12 inches before the door, before you enter into that attic space, just make one puncture hole on each side. So you grab each wall because of the construction that Daryl mentioned that we had talked about last week. You're going to have a straight run or a run that's going to be predominantly the depth of the house. So if you can make just a little bit of an inspection hole, I'm saying a puncture hole. I'm not talking about making a big hole because we're going to draw the fire out and we're going to cut off our ingress and egress on that stair going into the attic. So a small puncture hole to see if you have any smoke coming out of those holes. If you have that, if you're a truck, just what Chief had mentioned about searching ahead of the line, that's your stop point. If you're clear and you have no smoke, then you can come in and then possibly if you can make your way into the other side of that knee wall to the opposite side of the room. So if you're on the Bravo side, make your way to the Delta side and make it an inspection hole into a knee wall. If you have smoke come out of there, back up because you may have smoke travel. So my experience is making those inspection holes are key. That before you make your search, you see that if you see smoke coming out, back down, get the line up there, and then you can do a coordinated fire attack in the attic, at least to knock the fire down. When the hose line's ready, that truck person or person searching can open up that hole bigger, or if you're in a smaller department, maybe having that person that's on the hose line have a forcible entry tool and open up those walls so you can put the nozzle inside those knee walls, excuse me, to make at least a little bit of an attack, at least to disrupt the thermal layering inside the knee walls before you make your search. I know there's been with us, Jimmy, in Chicago, there's been instances where firefighters have advanced beyond the line into the attic and unbeknownst to them, not checking the knee walls, they've opened up there's been smoke up there and they would open up the windows and then that starts adversely affecting the conditions in the hidden fire in those void spaces to where it grows and it's not detected. So to me, that's a huge safety thing, a huge safe measure advocate to my personnel on my company. on our company, I should say. So opening those walls before you commit into that attic.
Can I add on, Jimmy, one more thing on that too? And we hear this, and I have. Remember the justa, that word you hear a lot. It's just an attic fire. It's just a bread and butter fire. But have we really examined why these fires in attics, and especially behind knee walls, why they're so dangerous, and why we have to use caution opening up knee walls? Because you already have a vent limited fire, very O2 sensitive fire, and a very aggravated fire, right? Seeking a source of oxygen, right? In a very highly pressurized area behind that knee wall. Be mindful where you open up. It's going to be in search, taking the path of least resistance, and we do not want where we open to be our main, where we egress to the stairs. Your second route out is out of a window. But be very mindful, because every opening you make is a potential flow path. Every action on the fire ground has an equal or more adverse reaction. So the dangers of this is, yeah, we need to know where we're opening up. And this gives the if there's a greater call for a coordinated fire attack. Engine, listen to the truck. Truck, listen to the engine. Collaborate and balance these reports.
As we, as you mentioned a little bit about the, you know, getting a nozzle in a wall. I know last month, Steve had an angled nozzle that he carries in his pocket. I would venture to guess, at least in my area, I don't see a lot of that, you know, those kinds of nozzles. And as we move into talking a little bit about how we can effectively get water in the fire, give another shout out to Key Hose. Again, those tight spots and those lot of turns, like you mentioned, going the full depth of the house up in that attic, and Key Hose is a perfect option for that. But how do we effectively get water in these void spaces? What are some of those options that you found useful?
And Peter, can you bring up a picture of that burnout, the close-up of the knee wall space? Yeah, that one there. So this is a picture of a knee wall void space, and this is why Steve was talking about the angled nozzle. Once you open up that space, that you can get water down the bay. Now, I have no experience using that type of nozzle in that, but I will say this fire is, everybody says, you know, when a fire's hot, that's funny. I mean, fires are hot, but I would think my, you know, friends here would agree that these are unusually hot. They are like, you're not getting any cooling as you're entering the room, or the room may not have any fire in it at all. It's just like heat's all around you. And the amount of wood and air that this thing has available to it makes it very hot. And in addition to that, it's not in front of you that you're knocking down. It's not above you where you're pulling and knocking it down. You're surrounded by this. This is a balloon frame house. So you can see on that outside wall that you can have embers falling down into the attic space, or how the attic, down into the basement area. But you could also have a basement fire traveling up the wall. So we do check the basement for any drop down fire as well. But there's a ton of oxygen, a ton of wood, and it gets extremely hot. And with that said, I have found having a regular line wide open, one of the negatives of the 90 degree tip is it's a smaller tip. You need a good volume of water for a lot of these larger spaces, because they're very intense and they can really eat up a lot of heat. Can you go back, Peter, to the room where you can see the furniture and all? And I just want to piggyback on exactly what they're saying and searching. I think this is a different house I took a photo of. As far as opening up walls, there's a lot of air traveling up this balloon frame structure. Somebody may even have a line below. It could be disastrous if somebody's up here pulling wall and unknowingly somebody spraying water through the eaves, driving that air ahead of them, or if they're pulling ceiling below and spraying water up, that can just have fire venting out into the room and you're cut off from the staircase. So as both Jimmys were saying, this has to be coordinated. Before you start moving furniture around and pulling wall, you have to have a line in place and you have to know where the members are, because if somebody goes in there, you know, starting to chop wall open, or it could be fire driving out of that hole and cutting you off from the stairs. Anything Darryl, else you guys want to mention on this?
Darryl, no, it's a great picture. I was going to mention that you had another picture that shows another perspective of knee walls that go in multiple directions in a residence or at a structure. I think you have it in one of your you submitted instead of just the straight a story and a half or two story for Oakland, but how it just went straight back on like a 20 by 50. Oh. You have one that actually makes a turn.
Before you go off that picture though, I think it's important to take a hard look at that, because one of the phenomena that we're looking at with UL and NIST and others is when you have a combustible void space as big as that, a tremendous amount of energy, as Darryl was talking about, that remember that superheated smoke is superheated gases, and there's a tremendous amount of energy in there. So you know, when you look at this, how much space is really concealed in there, where you can have a large accumulation of basically fuel, as Darryl said, if you don't coordinate it well, you can invite a true disaster in that space that you're working in. And it's also a great photo to look at with the lath on the wall, right? Like, you know, that work was done a long time ago, and I was not on the crew that did it, but they were from my generation or prior, because no one's done that kind of work in generations, literally yeah. generations, mm-hmm. which is interesting, because when you think about the tools we work with currently, if you're, you know, again, why you have to know your neighborhoods, why you have to know your districts, why you have to know your buildings, you know, if you can't recognize that, if you're taking just, you know, flathead axe and a drywall rake, good luck. You know, the drywall rake is not going to penetrate that. You're going to have some real work ahead of you, because it doesn't, what gives it, it becomes substantial because of the way it's layered, right? So it's an interesting phenomenon when you work with it, and just a great photo, very illustrative. The other thing to look at when you look at that photo is just look at what's up there. There's a bicycle up there. There's, you know, just the array of debris and content that whenever we're doing our studies, and no disrespect to my friends at UL and NIST, it's hard to accurately furnish these places, just because they are so, the amount of stuff that people put into a building today is so intense.
Yeah, the other thing you notice in this photo, there was no fire in this room, but it was hot.
Mm.
There was never fire in the room. It came from an exposure. And Peter, if you go to there's a photo of the exterior of what this building is. It's like a four-story Victorian. This was the exposure of, you could see part of the main fire building there on the right, and it was the exposure. So the fire got into the knee wall void spaces because it traveled up the exterior wall into the, doesn't really look like there's much eaves. I'm not exactly sure how it penetrated the wall, but it ended up getting in there. And Zasunig, I don't know exactly the photo I had. I know I had a number of photos, but this may illustrate what Zasunig is talking about, that there can be many turns. It's not linear like the one-story house. There's just a knee wall from the number one to three side, or alpha to Charlie side of the building, where this literally can almost go completely around the building. That void space is going to be in many, many directions, and you have to really be thinking about where can it travel to. So here we had to check under the floors. It's balloon frame, so we're getting into balloon frame construction a little bit. It can travel laterally under the floors into the knee wall void space and also drop down into the basement as well. So yeah, this was chopped up, and this was typical of my district. But another indication of balloon frame construction is you see the pipes that run along the exterior of the building. That's another indication as well. But it's chopped up into probably just four different living spaces. Another quick story, and this is a fire that had let me know that we're not always knowledgeable of exactly that a fire may be in the knee wall void spaces. A crew was sent up, or an individual maybe, to see if there was fire extension in the attic. So they pulled above them, which a lot of people may be thinking that the fire's in, checking for extension in the attic. So when they pull the ceiling above them, above the collar tie there, is it was just some trapped smoke, as the report was, trapped smoke. And there was fire in the void space on the side of them unknowingly. But those are some of the problems we can have if we're not understanding where void spaces may exist in some of these buildings. You have to realize that you're actually in what was the attic, and that the attic's all around you. And you may have to move some furniture and check a wall and have a line up there in case there's some extension in there.
Daryl, if I can add on to that too, and I also teach this too, and it's important to get this message across, is I call it words of caution, words of concern, or words that might lend suspicion. When you have companies working inside an attic, and you may hear these words, high heat conditions, heavy smoke conditions, and the one that gets me a lot is we're having a hard time locating the fire, or we can't find the fire. That should raise a high index of suspicion, all right, that you may have a knee wall fire. And you got to pursue it before, investigate, make an assessment. And again, the corresponding exterior and interior conditions match. Do they balance out? It's pretty common. You know, then there are some fires. On the other hand, a one bedroom fire, you knock it out, you know, things should get better. All right, if things are not getting better, that should also draw awareness, concern, and raise the red flag of suspicion that this fire is now in the voids, in the knee wall space or above you.
Hey, Clark,
great point.
Clark, have you found any, do you use anything out west, or have you used anything in these types of buildings for water application that you found helpful besides just the hole in the nozzle, a hole in the wall with the nozzle? There's a lot of challenges depending on the type of roof construction and things like that we're dealing with. I know they mentioned nails and some different kinds of nozzles, but I don't know if anybody's actually using those kinds of extinguisher methods.
No, Chief, out west, we have very few knee walls. In fact, I don't know if I've ever been to a knee wall fire before, but we do have obviously attics, sheetrock attics. I've never been on a lath and plaster fire either, because again, my city's only about 125 years old total. And typically the way we run in Las Vegas, as soon as a building gets to be 60 years old, we knock it down and we build a new building in its place. That's how we roll. So what I've found, and I know there's a lot of different discussions on how to attack just attic fires, all right? We did the knock out the bird block and we send water up the exterior, hits the peak of the roof and comes down and rains down. We're now talking about putting a hole in the roof and dropping down a cellar nozzle or a distributing nozzle in that. Also piercing nozzle from above, piercing nozzle from below. And there's also talk about property conservation. We don't want to destroy. Once we start putting water in the attic, we want to keep the lid from falling down. I've personally never had any luck with fighting an attic fire and keeping the lid intact. All right, 100% of the time, if we're putting water in that attic, the insulation is going to get saturated. It's going to fill up with water. It's going to get heavy. All your sheetrock is going to get saturated, and you're going to drop the attic down in the living space. So my personal experience, the best, the fastest way to get in and fight an attic fire is you set foot in the front door. And also we don't have a lot of basements, so we don't sound the floor. As soon as you cross the threshold into the house, we put a hole with a hook in the ceiling right above us looking for attic fire. If we do find fire above us, then the nozzleman, he just opens that nozzle wide open and he concentrates that stream into the hole that we make. And we are trying to fill up that attic space with water, and we're trying to saturate all the sheetrock. With that, you saturate all the mud and the sheetrock joints, the tape and the mud. And once that gets saturated, it starts loosening, and then your hook can just travel right through, and he just stitches. He finds himself a roof truss, and he goes along there, and he just starts stitching, stays on the outside of that, because you travel about 10 feet with that, and you will drop the whole piece of sheetrock. 4x8 sheets will just come falling down. Make sure you're not under that. Mm-hmm. Then you have a huge area to put water in. That's my experience for the absolute fastest and most efficient way to get water in an attic space. And that way, once your nozzleman gets in there, he can now start fighting fire in all directions. He can be doing 360s, fighting fire around him, to the left, to the right, behind him, filling up that attic space with water.
And just as a shameless plug, if you want to learn how to do that method from Mike Champo, he teaches it in a truck company class at FDIC, which still has space available. And we also have a great video on it in Training Minutes. And it's a great technique, Clark, and you described it very, very well. It's a really fast way to open up a drywall wall and get in and attack the fire. So,
and Chief, I'm glad you said that, because I've been teaching and doing that for years, and I can't remember where I got it from. And now I think about it, it was probably Champo in the Training Minutes that I got that from.
And that Training Minutes is probably 15, 16 years old, 18 years old.
And that's not how long I've been doing it, boss.
Yeah.
It's great that we all learn from each other too. I was on a drive home and talking to Jimmy Sunig, you know, about tactics and knee walls, because he goes to a lot more of this stuff than I ever did. And he talked about being on the floor below and pulling the ceiling from below if the flooring hadn't been constructed all the way to the side. And it's like, well, that sounds like it would be a lot easier, a lot less of a beating to do that. Why have I been in these attics trying to pull this wall in these conditions when maybe that's what we should have been thinking about? Did you have anything to add to that, Jimmy?
It's just another alternate way to get water in a fire or cool the conditions. So, well, traditionally, most departments have SOPs or operating orders that if they have a line going upstairs, they got to have a line on the first floor. So if that's the case, and our experience with Jimmy Davis, you can chime in if you'd like. If the engine company is having a hard time getting into the attic, or if the truck is having a hard time getting those inspection holes and there's no smoke, or there's so much heat, like you said, Daryl, of getting into that attic and there's a delay, even with Jimmy's, some of the key terms they use, like those triggers that should raise the alarm. Another alternate is to go to the exterior walls of the house and try and pull that ceiling. And it is more successful it's easier, as Chief had mentioned, that the lath and plaster is a lot easier to pull than the drywall, because you can pull and you can get big pulls on those. But if the floorboards are not all the way to the edge of to the eaves, then it's a nice way to have the engine on the first floor, start cooling that environment at least enough so you can buy some time for that engine that's going into the attic to get in there. Sure, Daryl, like you said, it's going to be hot, but you're reducing the chances of that fire in the attic lighting up on them in the knee walls. And so it's just another way to make the attack. It's not the surefire way to fully extinguish the fire, but it's a way to buy time and a way to prevent that attic from lighting up or flashing or having a smoke explosion, just reducing that thermal layering for that first engine to get in. And that, Chief Holman, what I mentioned about the inspection holes and putting the nozzle in there, it's just an initial whack. How it usually goes for us on our fires is a truck will come up, hit each wall, make an inspection hole. If they see something, they'll call the engine, they'll get out of the way. They'll come up either in and get around the wall for protection, and the engine will come up and give each side of that knee wall a whack, or open a line, excuse me, for my vernacular, open up the nozzle and get some water in that knee walls, and then shut it down. And then they can get themselves in there, and then the trucks can come up without clogging up the stairwell, which we haven't talked about yet. Getting up without clogging that stairwell, getting up and start pulling. I would recommend going for the knee walls first before you pull the ceiling, because you're going to start exposing where the fire is. If the fire grows and goes up, why are we going to go start at the top? Why don't we just go back down to the bottom and make our work more efficient, and then open up those walls? So then with Mr. Clark said, then we can go ahead and start whacking that thing to 360 and put tons of water on our dura, like you said, and not the little droplets of water. That's how it usually will go for us. So that first part about putting a nozzle in the knee wall is just a way to give it a quick knock and then get in the attic and then make an aggressive coordinated attack.
Jimmy, you had talked about too, a water application or trying to achieve water on the fire. These are great points too, but have we also discussed and talk of how the truck company is also going to support the engine? Back up a little bit. Remember, it's this high heat, no visibility, can't find the fire again, or cues that truck, right, has got to open up that roof too. And we really haven't talked about that much, and what is an effective, efficient vent. It is with my experience is opening this thing, right? There are some cuts that open all the way from the ridge, working all the way down to the gutter line. All right, I believe a Buffalo cut, a Milwaukee cut, but you got to relieve the conditions behind that knee wall. All right, and the reason for that longer type ventilation hole is that you're venting, number one, that livable space. But as you come down, you're also relieving the pressure. All right, what's lurking behind that knee wall as well? So you can pop the top and burp this pressurized smoke condition and hopefully get a good return of fire coming out of your vent hole. It's a pretty good vent.
Jimmy Davis. I was on a truck for a lot of years. I'm trying to picture what you're talking about. So are you in Chicago? You guys are still on axes, right? You guys use chainsaws.
Chainsaws and axes, but you know what? Axes work 100% of the time when the chainsaw doesn't start. But our guys are very good on all. We're a very good truck company department. We take a lot of pride in that. So we'll use whatever means that we do have. Clark, but you're saying you're trying to picture what this hole looks like?
Yeah, I'm picturing the knee wall. Are you on the roof on a roof ladder, or are you cutting from a extension ladder? Because I'm thinking in my mind, it's got to get pretty dangerous if you're trying to cut a knee wall at the very edge of that roof, right? I'm nervous just talking about it, Jimmy.
Yeah, Clark, I'll paint it a little bit better. Again, with knee walls, remember the pitch of the roof, all right? It gives you that ceiling height. These would be done with roof ladders, with the hook attached to the ridge, two firemen side by side, walking it from ridge, cutting all the way down. As they're cutting, they're opening that ridge. So that the very top part, you relieve the pressure, the conditions of that livable or occupiable space. And as you work down, you're catching that knee wall.
Okay.
So side by side, two guys working to be efficient. You know, we have the luxury of many truck guys, many hands make the work light. I know some departments don't, but it's important if we get anything from this discussion here is that it's better to relieve the two conditions, especially relieve those conditions so that engine can make that push.
All right. That makes sense, Jimmy. Thank you.
Yeah, that Milwaukee cut, I think you alluded to that strip, is maybe unique to them, where they cut a long strip from the peak down all the way down to the eaves. We don't do that type of cut, but we will make a cut at the peak and then make another cut down over the void space above the eaves as well. So you may have to cut two holes. You find that to be the case as well, Jimmy?
To answer your question, Daryl, it's another good point. You might not know where the end or where the, kind of like in this picture here where you see that horizontal 2x4 going across, whether being a nailer where they attach the drywall. If you start high towards the ridge or the peak, you see where you're going to be capturing that area above the collar ties or the nailers. But as you work your way down, you are going to have much better coverage of opening that knee wall area and giving it a more effective and possibly a more efficient vent.
Is this what you're talking about, Jimmy? Can you see my cursor?
Yeah, correct. That's where that knee wall would be, where it makes a transition, right? Because remember, there's three voids in an attic or a finished attic, which is livable and occupiable. You got three voids. The knee wall, the area above you, all right, that attic space, and then the knee wall on the other side, the opposite side of that. But you got to be able and hopefully be able to cover that. And that's, again, why that Milwaukee cut, I think, is very efficient, because there's no guesswork, right? When the wall starts or where it ends or where it terminates, you strip that thing down, boy, all the way from peak all the way down that gutter line.
Bill Carey mentions that on Facebook that in their area, when they find opening up, they find opening up low when you have confirmed fire in the knee wall works well too.
Now, remind me where Bill Carey works, and I'd like to know, is he using that Milwaukee style cut that Jimmy was talking about? If you're on Bill Carey, pipe in and tell me if you're using that same kind of Maryland. All right, so you're using the same Maryland type cut? Not Maryland, I'm sorry, the Milwaukee type cut?
Clark, I don't mean to interject on your question, but Milwaukee cut, they were displaying that with Truck Company Essentials at the hot training at FDIC over the years, and they were using the K950 or K970 wood blade. And then it seemed like what Jimmy mentioned about the Buffalo cut, they're using more to chainsaw. It just depends on what your department recommends, what they feel comfortable with roof operations and what they would use. Both have been shown at FDIC hot training. And then to just allude to that is if you were going to start that cut, it's just something I would just want to put out there. Make sure you don't start at the ridge board. Please come down like maybe a foot below the ridge board, and then go ahead and make your insertion on that saw. You don't want to start causing problems with the structure of the building by cutting that ridge board. So
Jimmy, I haven't seen a ridge board in Vegas in 15 years, brother.
I was just going to say Legacy Construction. So I was just going to say that when you said that. So on Legacy Construction, you're going to have the ridge boards. And but again, if you have a lightweight construction and you have truss, pop that cap and see where your truss is. And same thing. And I think a lot of Chicago's seen a lot of renovation, and this does come in handy for us. But our department recommends that you use a chainsaw, not the K970. We say no circular saws on the roof. So for us, doing that trench cut or the vertical trench cut instead of horizontal trench cut, to us, you're not going to be cutting a lot of the lumber in a truss constructed renovation. So that's also a nice thing too, if they did renovate or did make that attic a livable space.
So as the ombudsman here, and working for the host, I'm working for you, Jason. I'm making you look good. We got some questions in from Facebook, and thank you so much for that. Some great folks. Bill Carey, and he was talking about Maryland. I don't know if you guys can see that, but he said in their area, they find coming up low when you have a confirmed fire in a knee wall works really well. And then from Cameron, I'll butcher your last name, Shimenti, I believe. Cameron asks, how beneficial is a tick with these fires? Anybody want to take that? How much of an advantage if you're using a thermal imager when you're chasing a knee wall fire?
Well, I could jump on that really quick. I think it's rather effective on a wood frame. Remember, we should still be doing 360s, right? Observing conditions before we commit ourselves. I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure a lot of you guys would agree with that, is that sometimes you miss things by not doing a 360, or you get let in by the homeowner. I'm smelling smoke on the second floor, all right? But we're totally missing possibly that of a fire or a parent or the source fire in a basement. Running the tick camera up the sides, again, of seeing the cavities does work. We were able to narrow down balloon frames, especially in balloon frames, the route of travel, and deploy our assets and resources there to knock this thing off. So they are effective in there, finding that fire in the exterior wood frame. But also not only that, bring it in inside, it might help aid find the fire, and secondly, help expedite your searches.
I have found the same thing. I find it has been most useful on the outside of the building, showing that that's where it's really showing the heat. Unfortunately, I don't know if it's the type of camera or whatever. On the inside, I have found sometimes the camera whiting out. I'm dealing with mostly lath and plaster, where it's not really specifically showing that location. But we know, like in the earlier picture I had, there's a lot of furniture and things in the way. So it's not like I'm just looking at a spot on the wall that's specifically hot like I can on the exterior of the building. But because the dresser drawer or whatever is not going to just, or the bicycles aren't just going to show up hot. So the outside of the building, don't underestimate how valuable that may be. And it also may be showing that bay, you know, if fire's traveling up the wall, that whole bay will show up white.
Bill also added that they see a lot of these in Cape Cods. We hadn't mentioned Cape Cods, but that's another type of resonance that you'll see these in. And then Arthur Ashley out of Lexington, Kentucky, he said on a story and a half home, it's a home, you know, it's a home run. And he said the knee wall fires can flash over, you know, faster because, you know, the fire wraps around the other corner, and when they're coming in to make the, like a pincher move on it to make their attack. So Arthur Ashley's a longtime contributor and FDIC instructor. So thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Bill. Great stuff, you guys. And this is a great picture. We were talking about this before we went live, and I got to see some of this actually happening in, this isn't my picture, but I got to see this happening. I was down in Oklahoma City and a couple of Queen Vicks were being remodeled. And this is exactly what was happening on the second story. But where that white older lumber you see right there with the cursor down low there, that was all brand new. So they were creating brand new knee walls up there. It was just fascinating to see how they were doing it, right? And they actually had some spots where they were using fir stripping, I guess because lumber is getting so expensive, you know, they're using those little fir strippings to build these flimsy little walls with. But you know, you think you're going to be going into a home that has some substantial construction features, and you can find with, you know, a modern day renovation that not to be so. So this is just a great picture, I think, of what's happening in a lot of these older homes across the country, especially now that we have so many of these, you know, subdivided residentials, because, you know, the way housing prices are and kids still living at home when they're, you know, 65. They got to have some place to live. So people are creating living spaces out of these walk-in attics, and a very popular feature here in Oklahoma, much like the old Queen Vicks, is you can walk in, you go to the top of the stairs and there's a door and it's the attic space. But now a lot of those are being converted into living space, which is, you know, problematic for us because you don't expect it. And it really wasn't designed for it. So maneuvering around in it can be really problematic.
That's a great photo. Something else that could be problematic is, I was thinking when Sunig was talking about the flooring being built all the way to the edge, and I can't say I encounter that a lot, but a lot of times people will use that area for storage, which earlier I talked about the amount of fuel in there, just the lumber is a lot of fuel, the structure, but people stuff in all of their, you know, Christmas decorations, Halloween decorations, old books and newspapers, whatever. And sometimes they're just putting that on top of some 2x4s they've laid down or plywood, and that'll, you know, block a stream or block you accessing that area, but really add to the tremendous amount of combustible material in that wall space too. So if it's not flooring but just stored material, you may have to try and move over a few feet and pull somewhere else to see if you can get some water in there.
Well, if you all don't mind, we're at the witching hour. I want to be respectful of everybody's time. I would like to thank everybody for being here. You know, this is exactly what happens at FDIC. You know, if we were at the show right now, the class would be over. You know, Jimmy would be packing up his little traveling briefcase and, you know, putting away his carousel of slides and all that stuff. And then we'd be going off to the corner outside the classroom and we'd be talking about it. And then we'd be going over to some sandwich shop and we'd keep talking about it. And then we'd be going out to dinner or we'd be walking the floor and we'd be talking about it. You know, and all of the things we said, like, why don't you use rotary stores on the roof? Tell me why we need. Oh, this is what happened. This is what we don't use. Because there were so many things that people said, and I apologize. I got to be at that FDIC show, so I got people asking me all kinds of questions all day, and I got to answer some of them because they pay me money to do that. So I just want to remind everybody, please, our friends at National Fallen Firefighters, they're going to have a table right off the Capitol Street entrance, main registration, where you can sign, you can sign up for Stop, Drop, Rock and Roll. Please go, you know, they'll be right there at that corridor that leads down to, that long corridor leads down to the Lucas Oil Stadium. They always have a table right there by the door. Victor will be there. Ronnie will be there. Susan will be there. Becky will be there. And sign up for Stop, Drop, Rock and Roll. It's always a great time. Come to the Firefighter Cancer Support Network Fun Run. Make sure you check out this barbecue bash. This is going to be a blast. We're going to have some goofy charity competitions we can do, and we can have a bunch of fun doing that. Please don't miss that. And of course, there's the stair climb. The first 343 guys and gals that sign up get a t-shirt and a coin. They only made 343 coins. So you get a t-shirt and a coin for like $20. I think it should be at least with Bidenflation, it should be at least, $2,000. We'll be Zimbabwe tomorrow. But for less than the price of a gallon of gas, you can register for the stair climb, but by April. But so you're right. We went up 50 cents here overnight, 50 cents. I almost lost my mind. So anyway, please Stop, Drop, Rock and Roll, the stair climb, one of my favorite NASCAR drivers. The barbecue bat, please sign up. Fool's Bash is going to be fantastic. I'm going to be talking. Hopefully I get to see him tomorrow. I'm going to be visiting Indianapolis tomorrow. I'll be paying my respects at Mark Rapp's visitation, but also visiting with some of my friends out there and getting up to speed on what's going on. The city is completely open. Everything's back on. They're getting extra hot cocktail sauce at Elmo's just for you, Jason, because they heard how much you enjoyed the extra hot. So that's happening. It's going to be a wonderful FDIC. I want to say thank you to my friends at Nashville and Firefighter, all of you guys for teaching there and supporting it over the years. You know, we couldn't do it without the great instructors. Daryl's taking a year off this year. I'm not sure why, but we'll be sure to launch an investigation and find out why he isn't there. And of course, please, you get a chance. We talk a lot about Kehoes on this particular webcast for a reason. Not only are they great friends of the fire service, they do tremendous training. They're involved with all the charities I talked about, whether it's the National Fallen Firefighters, whether it's the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, whether it's any of the things that really matter. Kehoes supports us in all of that. And they make an incredible product and they're great people. So, please let them know how much you appreciate, what they do for fire engineering and FDIC and keeping us on the air and keep helping us print those magazines and run the show, because they're the folks that make it happen. All the exhibitors do, and they're just wonderful people. The exhibit floor is going to be bigger and better than ever. You can pick up, there are over 50 CAPSI accredited courses. So if you got to keep your EMT license up or your paramedic certification up, you can do it at FDIC. I know lots of times you hear people say space is, filling up fast. I just got an email from Rhodes asking me if we can double the number of people in the in Grant Schwabe's class making the grab. I don't know if I can do that. Right now, all of his classes, all four sessions are sold out. So I'm going to investigate that with our registration people. It's probably doubtful, but there's another great VEIS class that covers a lot of the primary residential search technique stuff that Grant also carries. And that's being put on by Charlie Fidel. And that's an amazing class. So highly recommend both of them. Can't recommend both of them more. So if you're coming to FDIC, please fill out your dance card if you haven't done so already, because I already have your money, but I'd like you to get into the classes you'd like to get into. And join us for the main program, please. John Salka will be getting lifetime achievement. The Dan Shaw, who's a regular guest on this show, will be keynoting, as well as Doug Mitchell and Dave Page. And the Frank Viscuso is going to bring it home on Thursday. So if you haven't heard these guys talk, all of them, radically different personalities, radically different approaches, but all of them are just mind-bending. They're all brilliant, you know, guys, and they're just going to really, really, it's a great deal. Instructor of the Year is Joe Netter, a volunteer firefighter who wrote a great book on volunteer firefighting. So opening programs can be fantastic. Workshops are doing great. There's space left in the workshops because obviously it's SWAT training. You know, the HOT is hands-on, SWAT is sit on your ass. And so we have but it's all good training. So you could take a HOT class in the morning and you could take a SWAT class in the afternoon. You could take a SWAT class in the morning and a HOT class in the afternoon, or take a SWAT workshop for 8 hours and then a hands-on the next day. You can mix and match and add and all kinds of great stuff. So the water rescue class is amazing. Please don't miss that. Rid Under Fire, drilling at the speed of flashover. You talk about a great class. Please don't miss drilling at the speed of flashover. One of the most amazing facilities, one of the most amazing group of instructors we've ever had. So active shooter is filling up fast. Please don't miss out. Active shooter has a full medical component, 8 hours of medical CE for taking that class, because it's not just about getting in and getting to the person, but they're going to show you how to, you know, bandage them, treat them and get them the heck out of there. So much going on. I can't wait to see you all there. It'll be a maskless event. So if you like wearing a mask, stay home. Anyway, just kidding. You can come and wear a mask if you like wearing a mask. Victor does. And obviously, you know, I'm just teasing. So we'll see you all at FDIC. I want to say thank you to Jimmy. And Jimmy, I think you should come on all the time. I don't know what we've got planned for next month. Does anybody know what we got planned for next month?
I don't know. We didn't really get into any attic stuff, mostly knee wall. So we've got some stuff for maybe some large area attic spaces, commercial attic spaces. Who knows?
Part three of attics. I've got some great photos that Pete and I can bring in too of a cockloft attic fire that we got the other day. I'm going to use one for the cover, but you can see three separate residences with a common cockloft, you know, like row houses, and fire coming out of the top of all three cocklofts. And just an iconic photo. I mean, it's just duh. You know, once it gets up there, when you have a common space between residences or occupancies, you got to know what you're doing, because it can go bad fast. So, well, thank you all for being with us. It was awesome visiting with everybody. We'll see everybody in 6 weeks in Indianapolis.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
God bless America. Be safe.
God bless America. Amen. Amen to that. Say your prayers and be good.